All right. Jake made it. He's 20 minutes early. Sorry about that, Jake. Jake Daniluk has been a part of the broadcast industry for, count it, 6 years, starting as a volunteer in a high school radio station. I remember high school days when I worked in a real one. Currently studying electrical engineering, Jacob has focused his career on providing the leading-edge technology for audio point-to-point and point-to-multipoint distribution. Jake Daniluk.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to come and speak to you here. So far, I'm enjoying Wisconsin. So today I'm going to talk to you about remote broadcasting and ways we can rapidly move forward and still be cost-effective for this. So here are a few points that myself and some of the other Tyline staff members have thought are good points to keep in mind for moving forward for remote broadcasting. First off is switch your transportation method of remotes while still having your backups. Backups are great. I don't want to tell you to get rid of them, but it is time to move forward. Reduce the amount of overall equipment you have at the studio and out at the remote site. Nobody likes hauling around a lot of equipment. And then make sure your equipment is long-term ready. And I'll explain that here in a little bit. So, a lot of you may be familiar with some of this stuff. You got some RD units, some RPUs. They're big, they're hard to move around. Talents don't like them, and some of you may not like them, but they're very time-consuming in setting up, so we can definitely change that. What about these? These are telephone hybrids and a JK Audio box down there. I believe that's the Bluetooth model as well. They're great for POTS connections, not a POTS codec, but they do work. And then we do have your POTS codecs. These work out pretty well, too. They're good quality. As long as you have a good, reliable connection, you're good to go, but they are outdated. So where do we go from here? Well, I think I just passed it. Maybe it's not in. Well, these units here. These units have a couple of things in common. Some of you may be familiar with them, some of them you may not be. And here at the top, I'll just explain that's the TeleZip 1, followed by the Comrex Access, and then the Tyline Merlin Plus. They all have IP in common. They all work over the public internet, and they do it very well. They have a few couple of key features that they all have that differentiate them from each other. And I'll discuss some of those here in a few minutes. So, the nice key features about these is that they can be inexpensive to set up and maintain. They're easy to get installed, or IP, in terms of IP. They produce a great quality connection. They're reliable, question mark, I'll explain. And the possibilities are limitless with this. So, just how inexpensive is it really? ISDN, you have your base cost, some contracts you have to pay per minute. Your bills can get pretty expensive if you do this for a long 4 or 5 hour remote broadcast. And it's getting even more expensive as time goes on. I know that where I'm from, Indianapolis, I'm paying about $600-$700 a month for my ISDN line. Very, very expensive. POTS. There's a base cost plus your feature cost. POTS codecs don't need features. Again, you have that nice base cost then, but it's hard to get an analog line, which you really need for a POTS codec. So now, most cases, you have a digital line. POTS codecs don't like them too much. Telephone hybrids will work with them, but again, you sacrifice that quality for G711. In terms of internet, you see I put a few different internet types up there, like internet DSL, a T1 or a managed internet connection, and then your fiber connections. They all have base costs. You don't typically pay anything, you don't typically pay anything extra for these, and they're very easy to get installed. How easy? ISDN, very few service providers will install them. Almost none of the ones in Indianapolis will even offer you that service. If you have it, they'll take it away from you by 2017. POTS, easy to get installed, but like I said, it runs analog, is what we need. Digital is what they will provide. IP, you can get it installed, easy to maintain, can typically be installed within a couple of weeks. 1 to 5 days is what Indianapolis will install an internet service of any of those service types I provided. You can get that a lot easier. So in terms of great quality, with ISDN, you have a few basic algorithms that it can maintain because of the limitations in bit rates. In terms of IP though, IP we can have a wide range of algorithms from G711, POTS quality, or all the way up to PCM, pure audio quality. Bit rates, if you run compression, depending on the manufacturer, you can push it all the way up to 384 kilobits per second. I know Tyline and Comrex, I believe, can do that. In terms of sampling rates, you have anywhere from 8 kilohertz, your low-end voice-grade quality, all the way up to 96 kilohertz production-grade quality. As of right now, I haven't heard any comments from any other manufacturer, but I believe Tyline's the only one to offer 96 kilohertz. So, just how reliable. I believe this is the biggest question I've heard about this so far throughout the past couple of years of me working at Tyline. ISDN, as you all know, it works. Nothing more to it. It just works. POTS, it works as long as you have that nice, clean POTS line. IP, there may be multiple variables, but one, you have a one-time setup at your studio. Once you get it all forwarded and everything proper there, your remote is pretty simple to maintain. And there are a couple of features to help make that even more reliable. And those features consist of these right here. We have forward error correction, which I'll explain. Extended jitter buffer, which is a longer latency. Packet duplication, that is only offered by some manufacturers, but I'll explain that as well. And high quality with low bit rates and low latency. Like here, some algorithms will maintain FM quality audio at a very, very low bit rate. Great for remote broadcasting. Like Opus, brand new algorithm, probably one of my favorites to listen to. Opus, nice 48 kilobit per second connection, offering you a 20 kilohertz bandwidth at a low latency of 20 milliseconds. AAC, I do apologize, I didn't get the stats up there, but if you stop by my booth, I do have that on a sheet of paper. EAPTX, for those that are running talk shows, we can maintain a very high quality audio. Does use a little bit more bandwidth, around a half a megabit. But in terms of latency, you have about a 2.5 to 3 to 4 millisecond delay just from that algorithm. Very, very impressive algorithm. So for those of you who don't know forward error correction, I did not draw this first off. I found it. But it's a good representation of what forward error correction is. Like here in the first diagram, figure one, you have your first packet A. When that packet is sent, packet B then takes a copy of A and sends it as well. That's a representation of one style of forward error correction. Figure two is the same representation now, just at an increased forward error correction rate. And packet duplication. For those of you who don't know what packet duplication is, there are a couple of manufacturers who are now utilizing this technology more and more. It's great technology. IP, I'll be honest, a couple years ago, it was about an 80% reliability rate, maybe 90. Now with packet duplication, if you utilize this technology, it'll be about a 99.9% reliability rate. The reason I say that is because we utilize two ISPs. The top one, the red one, followed by the blue one, is a different ISP. So if you send out your audio through two different ISPs, connected down to, in this case, this is a studio to transmitter link, have it connected, what are the chances of both ISPs dropping your audio at the exact same time? Slim to none. So therefore, the other codec at the other end can reassemble the packets in a perfect audio quality. Now, again, I'm here to talk about remotes, so how does this impact remotes? Well, Tyline has actually implemented this. Can you guys hear me? Oh, wow. Yep, there we go. Tyline has introduced this same technology into our iPhone app. So now you can actually utilize this out in your remote broadcasting. There is another company that just produced something very similar with their hardware codecs as well, and I believe that is APT. They've done a wireless connection as well. So here, we use the same technology. Now we just utilize the 3G connection as well as the Wi-Fi radio at the exact same time doing that exact same thing. So, brings me on to reducing the amount of equipment. Myself and John Lackness, I don't know if any of you are familiar with him, one of my colleagues, him and I came up with this little blurb here, RFCB. Whenever you're looking for equipment and reducing the amount of equipment you have, first off, the R stands for do your research. Do what you need to, or research what you need, not what you want. Look at features and capabilities. Look at everything. Don't just look at the small little things, because it might trigger an idea for you. And then the B is base decision on applications over cost. Look at the overall application that has been presented to you. And don't try to shortcut it, because sometimes shortcuts may be better, but at the end, something else will sacrifice. And for your remote broadcast, it's the exact same thing. And here, I'll explain, you have your Lucy connection on the far, that's your left. And then underneath it, we have the Tyline iMix, followed by the Tyline Reported app and the Comrex Access. They both have big advantages, and they also have a few downfalls, but that is for you to decide. So, brings me kind of into long-term ready equipment. In terms of long-term ready equipment, purchase an IP audio codec. Don't go for just that POTS or ISDN codec. They might be cheap on eBay or Amazon, but in a couple of years, you won't be able to get ISDN. I can guarantee you that. The way the US is moving with our infrastructure, IP is here to stay. But in the meantime, though, a lot of those codecs can offer POTS and ISDN. So that might be of an interest. When purchasing an IP codec, make sure it offers IPv4 or version 4 and IPv6 version 6. And then think about how many remotes you'll do at a single given time. Why buy 5 codecs when you could buy 1 or 2 at your studio end to maintain all of those remotes? Why have a remote studio unit for each of those units? And that's some things that some manufacturers can provide to you, a smaller amount of equipment. So for those of you who don't know what IPv4 and IPv6 is, I just thought this always gets me, but I thought I'd share this with you. Top is IPv4, 4.3 billion possibilities, and then underneath that is IPv6. Big difference in numbers. This is what's going to be coming up more and more, and make sure that your IP codecs are ready for this. Because not all of them are, but most of the newer ones are now. So be ready to start purchasing IPv6 ready codecs. So here are a few examples. I'm trying not to be biased here, But here I have a picture of a Comrex Axis unit as well as the Tyline Merlin Plus. They do have quite a big price difference, but I'll let you all determine that because hopefully you'll do your research on these. And the Comrex Access, I didn't get a quote from any Comrex person, but I did read their manual, actually. And they do support mono, stereo, and dual mono. Myself, working at Tyline, I know the Tyline Merlin Plus very well. The Tyline Merlin Plus, we offer mono, stereo, dual mono. So you can have two simultaneous remotes, plus six mono. So you can now actually offer six multiple remotes, all discrete from one another, as well as a stereo with IFB and two stereo with IFB. So again, it comes down to do your research. Does the Comrex Access fit all your needs, or does the Tyline Merlin Plus? Again, that's for you to decide, not for me. Then here, ways to be cost effective. Again, wrapping up, and I'll answer questions. Switching to an IP audio link, it's very crucial to do. It's coming, it's back in the 90s, it was the technology of tomorrow. Tomorrow has come. It is time to switch. Reduce the amount of equipment required. Look at rack space, because rack space can get expensive. Save the amount of equipment out in the field. It saves money overall. Become long-term ready. Be ready for the next step of the internet, IPv6, multiple remotes. Think of the future as well. And now I'll take any questions anybody has. I know it was a quick one, but I'm nervous, sorry. Whenever I'm nervous, I talk faster. Yes, I believe we have a microphone coming around.
Oh my God. Fred Baumgartner. Did you do some statistical analysis on the reliability? I mean, you had the 80% versus the 99% number, but I'm just curious, did you like put a codec on the other side of the world and watch it for 48 hours and compare what happened, just out of curiosity?
Tyline has done this in the real world. Then there's also APT WorldCast has done this too. WorldCast has done this in an internal environment where they have a simulator that actually will replicate the public internet. Tyline has done this across from Indianapolis, Indiana, all the way to Perth, Australia. And that link has been maintained for, it's approaching 250 days now, and it's been rock solid through that. In terms of statistical analysis and coming up with those percentages were taken straight from APT WorldCast, because I did not have time to sit down and do the math myself. But if you want more numbers from Tyline's perspective, I can definitely get those for you.
Quick question about the Merlin Plus. You said you can do six mono remotes.
Yes.
How do you determine what audio gets sent back to the person in the field? Can you have six separate audio streams so each person who's doing a remote gets their own studio feedback?
Yes. We do have independent IFBs or discrete channels going back out to the remotes. The Tyline Merlin Plus does offer two XLRs and a DB25 for the other four. So we have inputs and outputs for those six.
I have a question. We use Tyline, and when you set up the audio codec, like say 192K, how much actual ISP bandwidth are you using?
As from a technical support standpoint, I was in tech support for many years. I always say 35%, but that's a high number above. It's actually really about 30 to 40 kilobits per second more than what you use depending on your algorithm. If you use the Tyline's proprietary algorithm, we try to keep a very low amount of bandwidth overhead. But when it comes to some of the other algorithms, we do have to increase that overhead a little bit. If you come by the booth, I can further explain exactly what algorithms have what bandwidth requirements.
Okay, one other question. Mm-hmm. In the setup, you know, it talks about other. It's like the standard. Is that Comrex, or what is that in the Tyline product?
I believe...
You're referring to the Tyline G3 field and studio units?
Yes.
The other algorithm is just there. It's sessionless data, essentially. It works with Comrex units, Telus equipment. You name it, it'll work with that. It's just in there just because the G3 equipment is an older style of equipment, so it's just there for compatibility.
Okay, thank you.
I have a couple of stations that I do some work for, and in two of these stations, we're using codecs for STLs, or studio transmitter links. One of them, we're using Comrex solution. The other station, I'm using a Tyline Bridget. Mm-hmm. Are you finding more and more stations looking to that? I know in my situation, these worked because these were long paths that we're not going to be able to get a traditional microwave link for. You know, another situation where you know, T1 was going to, the price was going to be high, and we kind of calculated the reliability, and you know, knock on the table here, you know, we really have not had a huge problem with it. Obviously, you know, the public internet and being able to control the sides of the studio and the transmitter, and you know, there's a lot of preparation into making sure that they're reliable, but it actually has become a pretty decent alternative to a studio transmitter link in a lot of applications. Are you seeing that more and more in the field, that you're getting asked more questions about using them in that way?
Yeah, the Bridget, I can speak for Tyline directly, of course, here. The Bridget was originally designed for STLs. That was our main goal with it. As time went on, we actually found that more people wanted them to be a remote broadcast unit as a contribution remote. And then we are starting to see more and more it's going back to our original market idea for an STL. More and more people are picking them up for STLs. More and more people are buying the Bridget Extra, which is our newer Bridget model. And I can explain that if you're all interested, but I'll steer away from that. You can ask me later. That model, or like our Genie products, the G5 units that I showed you with that packet duplication, people want that extra reliability there. So they're going with something like that. But the Bridget has become more of an STL product as well. Any other questions? Well, for all of you, this is my contact information. By any means and all means, give me a call, shoot me an email. Somebody suggested to me earlier I should throw a QR code up there. I'm sorry I didn't. But I do have business cards over with me, and also over at our booth, booth one, over there in the far corner. So by all means, stop by and say hi, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions. Thank you so much.